The following is Dan Perkins' appearance on Ken Lovejoy's Charlotte County Speaks radio show in Southwest Florida.
We are gathered here today, brought to you by Starbucks Cold Brew, to join Taylor and Jordan in holy matrimony. May you begin your life together, founded in love, honesty, respect, and Netflix. And may you have a lifelong commitment, powered by Duracell and comforted by Häagen-Dazs. And now, by the power vested in me by K Jewelers, I now pronounce you husband and wife. You may now kiss your spouse, sponsored by Chapstick.
Do you know what day it is today?
Today's Monday.
So, Columbus Day.
Yeah, what about it?
What are you guys doing?
Celebrating Columbus Day.
What's your policy on Columbus Day?
Columbus Day. Thoughts?
Celebrating?
Yeah, I'm just working.
You are Columbus and I am America. Discover me.
Let the show begin!
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is Charlotte County Speaks, your chance to let your voice be heard on local, state, and national issues. And now, broadcasting live from a dumpy little warehouse behind a Taco Bell, the host of Charlotte County Speaks, Ken Lovejoy.
Thank you, Johnny. News Radio 1580, 100.9 FM, WCCFradio.com, and on your iHeartRadio app. Charlotte County Speaks, just about 10:12 here, and on the phone, we're heading straight to Mr. Dan Perkins. How you doing, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself?
Not too bad, not too bad. How was your weekend?
We had the charity golf tournament on Saturday, and we had great weather.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody won the Mercedes, but and to tell you how tough the hole was, the person closest to the pin was 22 feet away.
Wow.
But everybody had a good time. We had a good meal, and, of course, great condition. It had a little rain the night before. Couple of holes were cart path only, but most of the course was wide open for carts. And we had 124 golfers. We had a
nice
full house.
Nice.
Yeah. And raised money for three charities. So we had a good time. And then the rest of the weekend was just terrific as far as weather.
Yeah, it was.
I do have a couple of things to bring to your attention, if you haven't noticed it. Right now, this morning, as we talk, gold is now $4,111.
Hmm. It's a little pricey.
Pricey, yes. However, on Friday, Bitcoin went from 124 to 112. It lost 12,000 points in one fell swoop.
Yeah, that ethereal little imaginary money is not for me.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, and that's that proved it, because the reaction was, at least the market pundits were saying, it was a reaction to the fact that Trump has put 100% tariff on top of the 30% tariff of everything coming in from China, and he did it in reaction to the fact that China raised the tariffs on rare earth elements being shipped to the United States, which are used in lots of electronic equipment. So it was a tit for tat. But Trump was asked over the weekend before he went to Israel what's that going to do to the price of stuff? And he says, I don't believe the tariffs will be at that level for very long. So, you know, he went to Israel to celebrate the end, a ceasefire, hopefully end of hostilities and a signing up of a peace accord, when no other president was able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a war that was started on Biden's watch that Trump ended. So now he's 8-for-8 in conflict resolution. But what he said over the weekend, which was a little nerve-wracking to me, is that he's decided he's going to make long-range tactical weapons, cruise missiles, the Tomahawk missiles, available to Ukraine. Now, again, we didn't know this, but Ukraine had been attacking the oil infrastructure in Russia and affecting their ability to export as much oil as they wanted. And so what was surprising is that with a big market collapse because of the tariff in the equity markets, crude oil dropped below $60 and went to 58 and change, which is almost a 12-month low in the price of crude oil. It's recovered a little bit, but a little above 59. But important, the $60 a barrel level didn't seem to hold. And we may see further weakness, which will lead to lower energy prices, including lower gas prices at the pump.
Nice.
So we had gold down, gold up big time, and we had crude oil prices come down. Interest on the 30-year bond dropped again. As we talked last week, we had went from an inverted yield curve to a traditional curve, which bodes well for the economy. And so the numbers were pretty good over the weekend. Now, I read the story. It was very disappointing to me that Hamas attacked its own people in Gaza because they were celebrating the peace accord and killed a number of people, a number of their own citizens. And they just seem to haven't given up. And though their leadership has decided it's time to lay down the weapons. And what was interesting was that the coalition of many, many, many different countries who were involved in putting this deal together under the leadership of Donald Trump seemed to be most interested in the fact that Trump has a development plan that would make Gaza the resort capital of the Middle East. And they seem to get very interested and very excited about exchanging guns and bullets for dollars and cents in building an economy, putting people to work, rebuilding the communities. Great accomplishment. I thought Mr. Trump did a phenomenal job of staying with it. It would have been easy, like other presidents, just to give up and say, you know, I tried my best. I couldn't make this peace. I couldn't stop this war, but let's go on to other things. And he put two people out there, Wyckoff and his son-in-law, to see what they could do to try to negotiate a settlement. And they brought it to the finish line. Now with his apparent significant support of Ukraine and giving them long-range missiles, which means that the Ukrainian government can now...
You mean the CIA?
I'm sorry?
You mean the CIA. The Ukrainian government isn't doing jack.
Okay, the CIA will go in there and fire these missiles to strategic locations in China, in Russia, which will, what everybody's wondering, will it cause Russia to want to come to the table? I don't know. If you increase the armaments, you increase the level of the war. And if we're going to use Tomahawks and cruise missiles,
we need to walk away. We need to walk completely away and just walk away. Walk away. Because we started that crap. We need to end it. We need to tell Zelensky, you're on your own. It's time for your country to have free elections and get rid of your ass and try rebuilding this country. It seems like NATO and our deep state, and by extension Trump, is just using Ukraine as a staging ground to try and foment a war, a larger war with Russia. I'm sick of it. Mm-hmm. It's useless. You've got the NATO countries that can't even fund their own armies for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to keep dragging this war out. I think it's a load of BS from the beginning. I think Victoria Nuland, Samantha Fox need to be grilled, tried, convicted, and sent to prison for what they've done. A lot of other people in our State Department and CIA as well. That we need to be out of Ukraine completely. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of treasure. And it's only going to get more people killed.
So you want to pull out any support, period.
Leave them.
Right.
Say, tell NATO, you guys want to you guys want to keep up with this? You guys are on your own. We're not sticking to it. And look at these countries that are, look at the EU now. Why are we part of NATO anymore? Look at how evil the UK is becoming. I mean, seriously. And look, you got this blonde broad in Brussels trying to turn the EU into the new Soviet Union. I got no use for him. I would be minimalizing my relationship with NATO if I had anything to say about it.
Do you believe that if the United States pulled its economic support from Ukraine,
the war would be over? Because nobody's going to prosecute the war. Nobody's going to prosecute the war. Who's going to pull the war off? You think France is going to jump? Oh, we'll jump in. You can use all our missiles. We got like 10. Let them have it. Why do we need to be? Why don't you explain to me why we need to be involved in the Ukraine war?
Well, I want to understand your position first.
We should have never been involved in it to begin with. We did this.
We should never allow
totally ill intentions on our part that this whole thing started. We started it a long time ago, and it needs to end.
I agree it needs to end, but my concern is that if the United States, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, I'm just trying to discuss it with you.
Sure.
If we pull out, do you believe if the United States withdraws its military support that European Union and NATO will step in?
No, I don't think they will.
What happens to the country of Ukraine?
It gets rebuilt because the war is going to be over. Russia is probably going to still occupy the Russian areas that it already occupies, and Zelensky's just going to have to deal with that. The Ukrainians, they don't want Zelensky anymore, and they damn sure don't want this war anymore. And I think if Trump goes to Putin and says, "Look, let's end this. I'm pulling all support and all missiles out. There's not going to be any more armaments. Let's end this and see how Putin reacts."
And European Union or NATO doesn't step in to support, you think that Putin will just stand his ground where he is and hostilities will cease?
I think there's a good chance of that. Yes,
I'm trying to figure out what the chances are, because I think if we pull out our
I mean, look at Putin. Putin was only reacting to what we've been doing, to us poking him and poking him. That's the only reason Putin invaded to begin with. He was just tired of being poked and smacked in the side of the head by us. You've got all the land you're going to get. Let's end the war now. If you agree to end this war, I'm pulling all support, all missiles out. And I don't give a crap what, you know, you're going to have to deal with NATO then. If NATO wants to prosecute it, keep the war going, then I guess Putin will probably keep it up. But I don't think NATO has got the willpower or the money to, other than talking about it, I don't think they have the ability to really conduct a war anymore on the level that they want us to conduct the war.
If we look at that, that really becomes, I believe, becomes a very serious problem for the left in this country. Because with the settlement of the Israeli-Hamas conflict, that's one less thing that they have to protest against. With energy prices coming down and things looking better, they're running out of things. They're supposedly going to do No King's Day next Saturday, and they're looking... But I saw the interview with the guy who's been supplying the paid protesters. He indicated that there are other, he's turning down requests for paid protesters in certain areas, but there are other organizations that have popped up that are taking anybody and everything just for the money. So it's no longer become a matter of issues. It's now become a matter of profit motive.
Yeah.
Can you make money at it? And
the left, with all of our tax dollars going to USAID and then getting parsed out to all these people who were paying these protesters, it used to be pretty profitable. But with USAID money drying up, you're reliant on just a couple of big evil billionaire donors to try and keep this going. So I don't know. They're no kings. I mean, it's just such a joke to watch these guys. I mean, a bunch of for the most part, a bunch of blue hair depends wearing freak shows singing, you know, old Bob Dylan songs and Woody Guthrie songs in protest. That's their big No yeah. Kings Day. Rah rah.
They're talking about next Saturday is the day, and that Washington D.C. may have the biggest protest.
Ooh, oh boy. Well, good thing we got the National Guard there, eh?
That's exactly what I wanted to bring up to you.
Hey, well, you know, violence against the National Guard is not out of the question based on everything that we've been seeing from actual Democrat candidates wanting their opponents murdered in front of their children and then having their children murdered. We talked about a poll. They sent a poll out in Virginia last week to Democrats. Do you think that what Jay Jones said in his text messages, wishing death upon his opponents, should he drop out of the race? Is that something that he should drop out of the race for? 93% said no, we got no problem with that.
I saw that and I looked at it and I said, how at 93% response rate, how deep down does the insanity go in the Democratic Party?
Apparently pretty, in Virginia, pretty deep.
So we're going to elect a communist in New York City and a would-be assassin in Virginia.
And then, I don't know, did you see the Winsome Earl Sears and Spanberger debate?
Yes. It was hilarious.
God.
But hilarious.
She's a sociopath. I mean, she just stood there. Not one reaction at all. Just that dirty smirk on her face, staring straight ahead, would not answer the question about Jay Jones.
But her demeanor on anything that she was asked.
Yeah.
I mean, the people would ask the question. You got 60 seconds, 30 seconds, 15 seconds, trying to get an answer from her, and she refused to answer. And she became more indignant as the questions continued to go. Then we got the lady. We have the elephant running in California for the governorship, for the congresswoman who brutalizes her staff. Pardon?
Oh, Katie?
Yes. I mean, it was amazing what she was. I saw the two clips, her with one with a reporter, and then she was doing an interview. Somebody walked in the background, and she just exploded on that.
Staff. Get out of my effing shot! Get out of my shot!
What is Dan? What's going on with these people?
I don't know, and I don't understand how they can continually say we're going to win the midterms, we're going to win back the House and the Senate. I mean, their approval rating is 25%. The mayor of Chicago is now under 5% support, and yet he thinks he's acting like he's, you know, God's gift to the civil rights movement. And
that's his meds. His meds talking. He's got big time anxiety. He's been he's got huge anxiety issues, and he's on meds for that. And I imagine that's what he's doubled up on his anxiety meds, which is giving him the balls to claim dictatorship of Chicago.
One of the reporters were reporting on the district judge decision and about the Chicago and the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Trump can bring the National Guard into Chicago. No, he can't deploy them.
He can just bring them there. You got to stay in the trucks.
What's the point of bringing them in if you're not going to let them deploy?
And, you know, there's a lot of cases to be made. I think Trump is being overly kind and generous to these worthless, useless, disgusting judges who think that they have more power than our sitting president. There's a case to be made for ignoring them at this point, to say, no, we're not listening to you, what you're asking. One, go back and read Article 2. Shut up, get out of my face, and go read Article 2, then go home and take a shower and think about it.
And the question that none of the reporters are asking, if he did what you said, what's the penalty from the court?
Yeah.
If he disobeys the order?
Nothing.
Send the marshals? to arrest Donald Trump?
Oh, no, it's going to give Democrats an opportunity to...
Don't the marshals work for him?
No, they're just going to have the... yes, the marshals work for him. And it's just going to give the Democrats an opportunity to try and impeach him again. And you'll get a handful of Republican wimps, eunuchs, to go along with it.
So my last question to you then is, given what's been going on, we're in week 3 of the shutdown. When is this going to end, and what's the likely outcome?
Are we still shut down? Really? I mean, you wouldn't notice unless you watch the news, you know? You wouldn't even know that our government is shut down unless you watch the news. Right. I don't know. I think Schumer's going to have to cave at some point. He's trying desperately to abide by the freak show element of his party, which is turning him into a freak show as well. So I don't know. You'd think he'd be caving here pretty soon. I would imagine. I don't know. You've got the hack Jeffries, the Mr. Green. The dude always looks green. He looks ill to me. I don't know. There's something wrong with Hakeem Jeffries. But you've got all these people just in on it who want to keep it going. I don't think this does the Democrats any good at all. I don't know what alternative universe they're living in to where they think that this benefits them at all. But I don't, you know, I would hope that they would come to their senses and end this. We're not going to be giving health care to illegal aliens. We're deporting illegal aliens now.
Right. So one observation. Do you think it's possible that one of the reasons why Trump is flying all over the world is to dispute Biden's inability to be president and keep up that pace?
Well, that's always been Trump's pace. But
I understand.
So I don't see that. I don't think he's doing it on purpose to like send a message to Biden. I think just Trump being Trump sends a message that he's in far better shape than Biden. And Biden was an illegitimate president who was ran by a cabal of criminals who did their level best to destroy this country from within, and that Biden has had no energy, had to be led everywhere by the hand, had to be pointed in which direction to walk, and had to have his entire life in public scripted with little 3x5 cards in his hands. I think Trump has made it obvious that he was an imbecilic president. And that Biden just did not have the chops.
You speak about those cards real quick. One of the things that I saw in video was that when he was meeting Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton, the card had to have not only the name but the photograph so that he could recognize who the person was.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's right.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
He had to have photographs of Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and Hillary and other prominent people on note cards so that when he walked in the room, he could see who was there. And he knew he could identify the person by the who was on the 3x5 card.
But he got 13 million more votes than Obama.
Be president today?
Exactly. But he got 13 million more votes than Obama.
Right. And Kamala says, this is one of the closest elections in the history of our country.
Oh, man.
She continues. She's telling that story. She's setting herself up to try and run it.
I just know because every appearance she makes, she sounds drunker than the last. And I don't know of a millionaire or billionaire who wants to give her a dime anymore the way she squandered over, what, $2
billion? $2.5 billion.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck with that.
In 100 days.
Yeah.
In 100 days.
In 100 days. Man, I'd love to be given that opportunity. Ken, here's $2.5 billion. Do you think you can piss this way in 100 days? I'll do my best, sir. I'll do my best.
All right, sir. Thank you.
It's Dan Perkins, ladies and gentlemen. Check out his website, danperkinsmedia.org, danperkinsmedia.org. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Here's a quick secret about today's show. They're making toast down the hall. Ever notice toasters are like the radio? You turn them on and they work. No pesky upgrades needed.
Sometimes you have to shake out the crumbs. And that goes for the toaster, too. Mmm, that wonderful smell of toast. Oh, enjoy the show.
We'll be right back with Charlotte County Speaks on News Radio 1580 WCCF.
And these numbers are horrific. Horrible, horrible deficit numbers. Again, to my kids and God willing, my grandkids someday, I'm sorry. Sorry, it wasn't me. I've been trying to fight this my entire life. I really am. You're taking a look at a beltway deficit of $1.8 trillion. Interest on the national debt is at $1.03 trillion and climbing. Outlays increased $228 billion to $7.04 trillion in the fiscal year that ended the end of this September. 8% growth in all three of the largest entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Discretionary programs grew right on down the line. Yeah, I guess you know what also grew? Revenues. Government keeps collecting more and more revenues, but guess what? They continue to spend more and more. WatchdogOnWallStreet.com.
News Radio.
All right.
A Trilogy Plus One by Dan Perkins, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile.
Dan, you owe me a good night's sleep, and I'm really aggravated about it. I read your books, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, and I got to tell you, I no longer have to take any no-dos or anything like that when I want to stay awake. I just think about the plots of your books. They are absolutely frightening, devastating, in fact, but some of the best reads I've ever had. And I urge everyone to take a look at it. It's a plausible scenario and one that every American should be absolutely.
Hello, and welcome to Dan Perkins Media. Here is his recent appearance on the Dove Network.
Perkins, the author of Sad Eyes Book 2. In Book 1, we watch her grow up and develop into an intelligent, practical, and beautiful woman. She knows what she wants to be, and she will not let anything happen that will stop her from reaching her goal. Book 2 has many challenges she faces during World War II. People say it's hard to put down. You can get Sad Eyes Book 2 at Amazon.com or JanCarrollPublishing.com and ask at Jan Carroll for a special deal if you buy both books.
We're back.
Okay, welcome back, and had some technical problems. I apologize for that. we're still getting some bugs worked out of our new setup here, so I apologize for that. Always an honor, always a delight to sit down with our good friend Dan Perkins. You never know what he's going to say, but we're here to straighten it out. He's a political commentator. He's also the author of What's On My Mind podcast, historical romance titled Sad Eyes. It's a series. He has a couple places to go to, danperkins.guru, or you can go to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us, which is an amazing outreach to veterans. So always an honor to have with us our good friend Dan Perkins. There he is. How you doing, buddy?
I'm fine, thank you. And yourself, you got a new set?
I'm doing great. We had some technical issues, but you know, life's technical.
Yeah, I understand.
Good to see you. All right, so much to talk to you about, so little time. Let's get into it. The big deal, the hostages are home. They're now day two of phase two, and the president said, if you don't disarm, we're going to disarm you. What's the Dan Perkins interpretation?
Well, that's a very important point that you're raising, as far as I'm concerned, because on day one, Hamas executed people who were considering running against them in a free election in Gaza. They were killing their own people to try and keep them in control. Now, as I understand the terms and the conditions of this, that nations from around the world, as far away as Indonesia, are going to send in peacekeeping forces in Gaza to try and deal with this. So the sooner we get troops in there, the sooner we can get control of Gaza. But clearly the president is not going to put up with any shenanigans. And when he says, if you don't drop them, we're going to go come get them, I believe they will.
Okay. Is there a timeline on this? Because they were supposed to also return 24 bodies. They returned four, and one of them wasn't even a hostage. We've seen this before. Quite frankly, that's about as offensive as you can get.
I want to answer your question, but I want to say to you and to your audience, before I answer the question, I want you to understand that what I'm about to say is based on experience and talking to people around the globe who have been in situations where they have negotiated with Muslims. The Quran differentiates a Muslim and me and you. In the Quran, we are considered infidels. And under the terms of the Quran, under an area called Sharia law, when an infidel is in negotiations with a Muslim can lie, cheat, steal, and never keep a promise and be perfectly acceptable under Sharia law and the Quran. So I have said for years, one of the difficulties in trying to successfully negotiate with Muslims is you cannot trust them. And I remind your listeners of Ronald Reagan when he was dealing with Gorbachev. Trust but verify. This situation is going to be very tenuous because the Muslims are looking at people who are not Muslims. They'll tell them whatever they want to hear and then do whatever they want to do. So it's going to be a very difficult time, very frustrating for Westerners who are non-Muslims in trying to understand how to deal with Muslims who are in power in Gaza.
So, given that, Dan, do we need to have a reality check that at the end of the day, this death cult called Hamas has no intentions of changing?
I think that's a very astute observation. However, I do have hope because the one thing that has been done, or one of the things that has been done, I should say, that's different this time around, is that Trump has convinced other Muslim nations within the Middle East that, and I know you've heard this a million times, it's all about the Benjamins. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is already talking about getting billions, if not trillions, of redevelopment money from those people who were behind and supporting him in this negotiation. And I think the idea of rebirth and regeneration and redevelopment of Gaza is a powerful, powerful force that will have significant impact on what the Hamas is going to do.
Okay, and him pulling together the other Middle East countries, even Shiites and Sunnis together to sign anything is pretty remarkable.
Yes. Yes.
With the goal in mind, let's redevelop Gaza. I get that. And at the same point, saying to those countries that were supporting Hamas, like Qatar, Syria, Turkey, stop it.
Right.
Hamas, on the other hand, may have a hard time thinking that they literally were pawns in those countries' hands, and their supporters have given up on them. And they are the mindset you die to advance what you want. So we could see some bloody days ahead before this is cleaned up.
I won't argue that point with you. But what I will tell you is that one of the things that drives, and I'm not trying to come back to the Benjamins again, but one of the things that drives what Hamas does is their ability to get money to buy their weapons and pay their soldiers and do all of that. It's important for your audience to know that West Texas Intermediate crude hit $57 a barrel yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's up a little bit today, but hit 57, broke 60. And Brent crude is hovering around 60. As the oil prices have come down, these countries like Russia and like Iran, who are totally dependent upon the sale of crude oil, are seeing their treasuries being depleted, so that the resources in play to fund Hamas aren't there. And if it continues to go down, we'll get worse and worse.
I want to ask you another question about this deal. It's so amazing.
Sure.
And that is how he went to all the other countries and put together this deal, and he ends up signing it in Egypt, which is kind of interesting because Egypt is also complicit to Hamas by allowing the tunnels. But the point being is he pulls all these people together to sign a peace agreement.
Right.
This is beyond historic. I'm trying to figure out the mind of the negotiator. It's been said that when President Trump or Donald Trump, the developer, sees a problem, the first thing he zeroes in on is the weakest link. And he kind of did that. He went to all the countries where they're direct enemies of everything and pulled them together. What's your take?
Well, I think that what you're saying is true, but I also think that the turning point in the deal was when the Israelis went after Hamas in Qatar and bombed a building. And it really made Mr. Trump, Mr. angry. And he was not happy. And I'm sure he took Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu to the woodshed and say, we're not going to tolerate this. So that the reaction of the president to the bombing in Qatar created a catalyst for Benjamin Netanyahu to be more accommodative to what Trump wanted to do. And when that happened, the Arab nations saw that in dealing with Trump, you had an individual who was incredibly strong compared to the weak sister of Joe Biden, and that Trump's got 3.5 more years. They could be in a lot of trouble if they don't play ball, and they decided to play ball.
So do you think at the end, before I change topics here, do you think at the end Hamas disarms or they'll be forced to?
I think there's going to be some trouble. And some people on the left will, at anything, the left will jump on and say, it blew up, Trump failed. Because they're running out of things to talk about and blame him on. But I think that the nuclear attack, the attack on the nuclear facility of Iran, took a lot of pressure off of the rest of the Middle Eastern nations, because they knew that Iran didn't have the ability, they had it, but then they lost it, to produce nuclear weapons and use them as threat, as terrorists against those other nations.
Okay. Let me switch gears on you just for a moment here,
sure.
Dan. I want to go over to Putin and Ukraine. As you know, Zelensky's coming to the White House on Friday. The president is now supplying intelligence and missiles to Ukraine. They're hitting energy targets inside Russia. It's been said that Russia may be looking for a nice way out of this because their economy is starting to collapse because they haven't been able to succeed. The president has said that Ukraine should take back the land that Russia has gained in this deal. Others have said, no, that will become the bargaining chip to maybe solve the problem. I realize this thing's full of a lot of details, but I'm trying to stay at 30,000 feet. What do you think?
I think that what I said earlier in the program about West Texas Intermediate and Brent crude prices falling below support levels, that impacts Russia dramatically because they are, as somebody once quoted, Russia is a gas station with nuclear weapons. That's what the that's what Russia is. And so with the gas station not being able to pump gas, the revenue that comes into the treasury of that country is being diminished and siphoned off by some of the oligarchs so that the Russian people are suffering because the government is running out of money and they spent trillions of dollars in trying to win the battle in Ukraine. So I really think that things are collapsing around Putin. And I think that one of the settlement, I know this is gonna sound like it's off the deep end, but that's nothing new for me, but I think one of the things that could happen here is that Trump is supposed to be meeting with sometime towards the end of this month. Mm-hmm. And he's now got 130% tariff on anything coming from China, and it ain't coming. And if it isn't coming, then we are their largest trading partner. They made a play. They tried a power play by saying that they were going to impact and increase the tariffs on rare earth minerals that are used in so much of the stuff that we manufacture in the United States. However, we are now developing massive resources our own right in the United States. And we've got this deal signed with Ukraine to start exporting from Ukraine the rare earth. So I think what's going to happen is very possibly that Trump is going to say to Xi, look, I'll tell you where you can put your rare earth minerals. What you're going to run into is a problem that Russia is not going to be able to supply you oil. And he'll say, we'll supply you oil under these conditions. And you take that oil, the largest oil trading partner for Russia is China. You take that away from Russia, they're in serious trouble. So I would think that Putin would be very, very nervous about this upcoming meeting between Xi and Trump.
So you think that the rare earth minerals, that the deal they made inside Ukraine could preempt the need of rare earth minerals from China?
In addition to what we've discovered recently in our own country.
Okay, that makes total sense. In the meantime, he's now looking at India. It's putting pressure on India from buying oil from Russia. How does he go about that?
What's going on is that India has been buying multiples of what they have normally been exporting or importing from China, because Russia has convinced India to be a broker for them. They buy the oil from crude oil from Russia, and they turn around and sell it in other countries and split some of the profits with Russia. So that Trump is saying, you know, if you're going to continue to do that, we're going to change our tariffs. And I don't think that India, its economy, which while it's got 1.4 billion people, its economy is still very rural in nature, and any disruption of any revenue sources would be devastating for India. So I think they'll capitulate.
One other quick question before I take a break. In the meantime, there would be another incentive to get this war ended so that Ukraine could go ahead with its elections, which means Zelensky most likely would be out and a new leader.
Based on the polling data, they don't want him back. It's like Churchill at the end of World War II. The English people loved him during the war. As soon as the war was won, get that sucker out of here.
Okay.
And that's what's going on. They respect Leszczynski for what he was doing during the war, and he had the legislation passed that you can't fire me while we're at war. But as soon as the war is over, general elections, he's toast.
And then Ukraine gets a leader, whoever that may, that might be more manageable with President Trump.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're right.
All right. Let me take a quick break. DanPerkins.guru, that's one of his websites. SongsandStoriesForSoldiers.us, where he has an amazing ministry outreach to veterans. Outstanding. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
After this break.
All right.
A Trilogy Plus One by Dan Perkins, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile.
Dan, you owe me a good night's sleep, and I'm really aggravated about it. I read your books, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, and I got to tell you, I no longer have to take any no-dos or anything like that when I want to stay awake. I just think about the plots of your books. They are absolutely frightening, devastating, in fact, but some of the best reads I've ever had, and I urge everyone to take a look at it. It's a plausible scenario and one that every American should be absolutely aware of.
Available at Amazon.com.
Okay, welcome back. And always a delight to have with us Dan Perkins. A couple of websites, danperkins.guru, his personal website, and then the other one that he has for an outreach to veterans, songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us. And there's a landing page of those. Dan, let's come back from geopolitical, come to home, and the government's shut down now, going on 12, 13 days. This is kind of interesting. I'm surprised to see that even the legacy media is beginning to realize this is the tenacity of Senator Schumer, and it could be fixed, but he ain't budging. Senator Kennedy has said that Senator Schumer behind the scenes is telling some of those Democrats, go ahead and vote for opening the government. I'm going to have to go out in the public and say bad things about you, but we'll all get together in the end and keep moving the ball down the road. I don't know. That sounds plausible. What do you think?
You know, I wrote, I think actually before the election, what would happen if we had a problem?
Yeah, we got a lot of problems. Keep talking, though.
Okay. So I wrote the what's going to happen if we run into a government shutdown, and I said I believe that Trump will use the reduction in force provisions of the employment contract with his government employees to start cutting back on personnel. Now, no other president has ever done that. So that what the Democrats are dealing with is what the hell's going on here? Because why isn't he acting like a typical Republican? Why isn't he giving us what we want? What is this? He's laying off people and furlough them and not going to pay them anything. He's not going to bring them back. And I come back to this simple question, which I've asked you before. We have 2.2 million administrative personnel in the operation of the federal government. Of that, 34% are classified as non-essential personnel. My question has been and continues to be asked, if we have 750,000 non-essential personnel, why do we have them if they're not essential? And so what
Dan,
Trump is doing is...
You're being crazy here. You're asking practical questions. You got anything else?
Well, Trump is starting to lay off the people who are the non-essential personnel.
Okay, well...
And by the way, how has the government shutdown affected you personally, sir?
Well, look, I'm enjoying no phone calls from the government.
You know, before the shutdown, I was calling Social Security on a problem. Mm-hmm. And I would get this message when I would call in. Thank you for calling Social Security. Your call is more than 120 minutes behind.
Okay.
Okay, last Friday in the shutdown, you know how long it took me to get through to Social Security? 20 minutes. Hmm. So what's going on?
I don't know. do you think the American people see what's really happening here on the shutdown?
Yeah, I think they do. I think that they understand what Trump is trying to do because he told them he was going to do that. And he's living up to his promise. And that's the problem that the Democrats are having. He made all these damn promises and he keeps keeping them. And the court keeps supporting him.
Mm-hmm. Well, The irony of all of this is the same resolution, CR, I should say, that they voted for in times past. So you kind of wonder, you know, the hypocrisy really reeks here. I don't know what they plan to gain out of this. I mean, did they actually think that this president and this House of Representatives and this Senate's gonna give in?
I cannot come up with a scenario, not that there isn't one out there, but I can't come up with one that says what would make Donald Trump agree to increase spending by $1.5 trillion in providing medical benefits for illegal aliens. Why?
I don't know. We just
there's no answer to that. And they again, it's an example, Perry, of just how out of touch the Democrats are with reality. The American people do not want their tax dollars going to pay for insurance premiums for illegals.
Yeah.
And whatever it takes, it takes.
Okay. In the meantime, the president is trying to crack down on crime. He's getting interrupted right here in Oregon. He's had two lower courts issue injunctions to keep him from bringing the National Guard in. It's sitting at the Ninth Circuit Appellate Court right now. And there's indications that they may overturn the lower courts because they think the president does have this. What's falling through the cracks here, Dan? Okay. What's happening in Portland and in Chicago and other cities is the term insurrection. It's been redefined right in front of our nose when most of this right. is certainly not only insurrection, but it is, well, it's insurrection. I don't know why we're trying to redefine it.
They're trying to redefine it because the Democrats want to create a different interpretation of the law. You know, we had, just speaking of Chicago, we had a federal district court make this ruling. Now, this is paraphrasing, I'll grant you, but it's what he said. Yes, Mr. Trump has the right to nationalize the National Guard, put him in federal service. Yes, Trump has the right to send him to Illinois, okay? But he can't deploy him. Why would the court give him the ability to nationalize him and bring him into Illinois, but not allow him to use him? But that doesn't make any sense. So it's the courts, again, are playing games from a Democratic standpoint to try and do whatever they can to thwart Donald Trump and what he's trying to do. But when you start putting, like, look what happened in a week's time, Perry. Mm-hmm. Look at what happened in a week's time in Boston.
Yeah.
The mayor was very verbose in saying, we're not going to let the ISIS come in. We don't have a problem. We don't have any crime problem. None of that. But the minute the thing broke out in downtown Boston, she was nowhere to be found. She said nothing. So she's, in a week's time, she went from being verbose about, we're going to protest this. And when the protest hit Boston, she disappeared.
Yeah.
So it's you have to ask the question, what is their motivation? And the idea that you want to kill ISIS or FBI agents or Homeland Security, whatever they are, you want to put them in line of fire. And I think if we don't stop this, it's going to get worse and worse. And I've predicted that the number one issue in the midterm election will be crime in America.
All right. I only got about a minute left. Can you tell me the difference between anarchy and insurrection?
Insurrection is considered to be an event, a process by which we try and take physical control of the government. Anarchists are people who protest but don't actually try to attack the government to take control of the government.
Okay, so what's happening when we're attacking federal buildings? Is it anarchy or insurrection?
I believe it's insurrection.
Okay. Because that's where we are. I mean, that's the problem.
Pardon me?
That's where we are. That's the problem. We're attacking federal buildings and threatening federal workers.
Right. So January 6th was what? A riot, insurrection, anarchy.
Yeah. Well, they want it to be insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting.
But now the media is calling it a riot.
Yeah.
They're not calling it insurrection or anarchy. They're saying it was actually a riot.
Yeah. Hey, good to see you. Thank you. DanPerkins.guru. And then songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us. You're looking good. You look healthy.
Thank you. I've lost some weight.
Well, you look healthy. I don't know what you're eating, but keep eating it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Dan. God bless you, friend. See you later.
Bye.